Prabhupada was saying how one devotee was looking really tired, and they said, "Oh, Prabhupada, we were up really late watching Charlie Chaplin." And Prabhupada said, I mean, most of you probably have no idea who Charlie Chaplin is, but neither do I. But Prabhupada was saying, he goes, "Oh, Charlie Chaplin, he's such a funny man." And Prabhupada starts laughing, and in the recording, you hear this really hearty laugh. And then for the next 15 minutes, all he's doing is talking about Charlie Chaplin. And Charlie Chaplin did this, and Charlie Chaplin did this, and he's such a funny man. Thank you for that story, Mother Rukia. Okay, it's nice to be back. Welcome back. Start with Jai Radha Madhava. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashodha Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashodha Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato jayam budhirayet nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. Hare Krishna. Welcome back from Christmas break. I was thinking before we get into reading the verse, I remember whenever we had any kind of holiday, Christmas or summer holiday, I always forgot everything I learned before the holiday. So I thought maybe we can do a little bit of a recap into where we are in the Bhagavatam, a little bit of an interactive recap to get yourself out of sleepy zone. So, who remembers what pastime is happening currently in the Bhagavatam? Anybody? Remember what the pastime is? Put a hand. It's a guy chasing Krishna. That was described. Actually, it's a trick question because there were so many pastimes within a pastime. Who are the two people speaking to each other this last few chapters in the Bhagavatam? I see a hand. Uddhava and Maitreya happening in this chapter. Before that, it was Uddhava and Krishna were speaking in the previous chapter, but there was two people having a conversation. Yes. Brahma Narada Muni having the canto before. Okay, anyways. It was Vidura. Vidura is on a pilgrimage. So Vidura's embarked, the third canto starts with Vidura embarking on a pilgrimage. And who is the first sadhu that he meets and asks questions to? Someone before that. Vidura meets somebody else before Maitreya. Uddhava. Yes, he meets Uddhava. And who is Uddhava? Anybody remember who Uddhava is? Yes. He's Krishna's friend. Not only Krishna's friend, he's Krishna's very, very dear friend. Very, very close friends. And Vidura left for a certain reason. Well, he left for, it was basically his time. But Vidura was the brother of Pandu. He was the brother of Dhritarashtra. Though he was, you can say, an ambassador of goodness. And he was on the bad side, technically. And therefore, he just wasn't getting through to his brother Dhritarashtra. And there was an exchange, an unfriendly exchange, and he thought, this is the time for me to leave. This is the time for me to go on a pilgrimage. I don't want to stay for the Kurukshetra war. This is not proper. So he left, and when he met Uddhava, what did he ask about? I heard it. Yes. Krishna. He asked about Krishna. How is Krishna? How is his associates? What's going on? Because he had a feeling that this is coming to the end of Krishna's lila. So Uddhava starts speaking, but not just starts speaking, yes, Krishna is this, Krishna is that, but he takes a good 48 minutes. It's really a long time to gather himself. His eyes are full of tears. He's really so absorbed when he hears the name Krishna, because actually Krishna has just left the planet. And this is something so hurtful for Uddhava to think about. His dearest friend, his worshipable Lord, has left. But he starts talking about Krishna's lila. Krishna when he was born, Krishna when he lifted Govardhan Hill, then Krishna when he went to Mathura, Krishna killing the demons, Krishna fighting Jarasandha, Krishna in Dwarka. And then the question comes, how did the Yadus leave? I don't know if this was maybe one of your Worship Wednesday classes, but does anybody remember how the Yadus left? The Yadus left, it was arranged by Krishna, but they fought each other. They became drunk and they fought each other. And this was to kind of relieve the demigods who had taken the form of the Yadus in Krishna's lila to go back to their post, and also to confuse the common person that, yeah, they just regular people got drunk and killed each other. And then the very last chapter, chapter 4, we're on chapter 5 now, Uddhava talks about his last meeting with Krishna. And so here Uddhava meets Krishna, and Krishna says, you should just go to Bhajikashram. There's many sages there. Bhajikashram is high in the mountains in Himalayas. And he said, you should go there and you should speak to these sages and you should pacify them because they're all very anxious also about my departure and speak to them about Krishna consciousness. But Uddhava was so attached, he said, no, I want to be with Krishna one last time. I want to have his association. So he sees Krishna under this banyan tree and Krishna instruction. And this instruction is so lengthy, it's so philosophical, and it's described in a whole canto in Bhagavatam later on called the Uddhava Gita. But during this conversation between Krishna and Uddhava, there was one more person present. Anybody remember who that was? I heard a whisper. Maitreya Muni was able to witness and hear this conversation, though at the time he wasn't a pure devotee of Krishna. He was a Jnani Bhakta. He was on the stage of mixed devotional service. And therefore, Krishna was not focusing on Maitreya specifically, he was focusing on his conversation with Uddhava, because Uddhava was his friend and spotless devotee. But through this conversation, Maitreya became purified and became realized. And so when Vidura asked, "Please instruct me more, O Uddhava, please instruct me more, I want to hear more," Uddhava thought, "Actually, I am not qualified to speak more because, one, you are senior to me, and I don't want to commit an offense by taking someone senior to me as a disciple. But there's someone named Maitreya Muni on the banks of the Ganga in Haridwar, and you should go to him. He's older, he is realized, and he can answer your questions, everything you want to know about Krishna." So that's the very end of the fourth chapter, which brings us to here in the fifth chapter, which is Vidura asks his questions to Maitreya. And we'll get into that today. So the verse, Canto 3, Chapter 5, Text 5. Karoti karmani kritavataro.
Karoti karmani kritavataro.
Yanyatma tantro bhagavamstradisha. Yanyatma tantro bhagavamstradisha. Triadishaha. Yata sasa jagra idam niriha. Yata sasa jagra idam niriha. Samstapya vrittim jagato vidate. Samstapya vrittim jagato vidate. I'll ask the older devotees in the crowd and disciples of Srila Prabhupada to first chant the verse. Karoti karmani kritavataro. Karmani kritavataro. Yanyatma tantro bhagavam svyadishaha. Samstapya vrittim jagato vidate. Students.
Karoti karmani kritavataro.
Karoti karmani kritavataro.
Yanyatma tantro bhagavamstradisha.
Yanyatma tantro bhagavamstradisha.
Yatasasajaga idam niriha.
Yatasasajaga idam niriha. Samstapya vrittim jagato vidate.
Karoti
karmani kritavataro.
Yanyatma tantro bhagavam svayadisha.
Yanyatma tantro bhagavam svayadisha. Sakasa Sanja Idam Niriha. Word for word. Karoti. Does them. Karmani. Transcendental activities. Krita. By accepting. Avatara. Incarnations. Yani. All those. Atma Tantraha. Self-independent. Bhagavan. The personality of Godhead. Tri Adisha. The Lord of the three worlds. Yata. As much as. Sasarja. Created. Agri. At first. Idam. This cosmic manifestation. Niriha. Although desireless. Samstapya. By establishing. Vritim. Means of livelihood. Jagata. Of the universes. Vidate. As he regulates. Translation. O great sage, kindly narrate how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is independent, desireless Lord of the three worlds, and the controller of all energies, accepts incarnations and creates the cosmic manifestation with perfectly arranged regulative principles for its maintenance. Purport. Lord Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom the three creative incarnations, namely the Purusha avatars, Karnadakshay Vishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and Shirodakshay Vishnu, expand. The whole material creation is conducted by the three Purushas in successive stages under the external energy of the Lord, and thus material nature is controlled by them. Thinking material nature to be independent is like seeing milk from the nipple-like bags on the neck of a goat. The Lord is independent and desireless. He does not create the material world for his own satisfaction, as we create our household affairs to fulfill our material desires. Actually, the material world is created for the illusory enjoyment of the conditioned souls who have been against the transcendental service of the Lord since time immemorial. But the material universes are full in themselves. There is no scarcity for maintenance in the material world. Because of their poor fund of knowledge, the materialists are disturbed when there is an apparent increase of population on the earth. Whenever there is a living being on the earth, however, his subsistence is immediately arranged by the Lord. The other species of living entities, who far outnumber human society, are never disturbed for maintenance. They are never seen dying of starvation. It is only human society that is disturbed about the food situation, and to cover up the real fact of administrative mismanagement, takes shelter in the plea that the population is excessively increasing. If there is any scarcity in the world, it is the scarcity of God consciousness. Otherwise, by the grace of the Lord, there is no scarcity of anything. Please chant with me. Om Jnanate Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tiyam Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Vastitya Deshakarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Guru Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare There's a devotee who passed away maybe 15 years ago. He would come often to Alachua. Elder Indian sannyasi, his name was Mahavishnu Goswami. And he would spend a lot of time with my family when I was young. And he had this phrase that my mom still quotes all the time when it comes to reading Bhagavatam. And he would say, read in between the lines. Read in between the lines. Anyone have any idea what that might mean? When you read a book and you read in between the lines. Wonderful. Yeah, you read more than what's actually said in the book. You read the more important parts. So you extract the essence of it. Yeah?
Yes, you read the text,
but you feel deeper meaning. One student says, you read the text, but you understand the deeper meaning of the book. Thank you. Great answers. So I was in Vrindavan and Govardhan recently, and one devotee, Bhuta Bhavana Prabhu, he was telling me about Bhagavatam. He says, you can understand the Bhagavatam directly, what it's saying, what the words of the text, words of the Shastra is being said, and what's the words of Srila Prabhupada and the purports, directly what he's trying to say. You can also indirectly read the Bhagavatam in the sense that what's inferred, what is the inferred meaning? Maybe not what's said, but the way it's said, the way something is approached in the Bhagavatam, or what's not said, rather. And this is reading between the lines. This is understanding more than what's just read. And I thought it was such an incredible point, because you see devotees, and there's probably a handful of these devotees in this room, who have been reading the same book, Srimad Bhagavatam, again and again and again, so many times in their life. But yet, every time they read the same book, more and more realizations come. But it's the same words. The words aren't changing. But what's happening is they're also seeing not just the direct meaning is having different realizations come up in their own mind, but they're also making inferences and seeing different hidden meanings that are there that are not necessarily spoken about. So I thought, let's try this a little bit in our Bhagavatam class today. Let's look at the verse directly and see what is Srila Prabhupada trying to say in the purport, what points are being made, what can we learn from that, but also looking at the pastime as a whole, looking at maybe how Vidura is approaching, asking these questions, how he's approaching his journey in general, has so many lessons in itself, even though it's not explicitly stated. So I wanted to go through the purport a little bit and just take out some important points. And this is also a really good, I guess, practice or on reading Bhagavatam, because when I had this verse to speak on today and I first looked at it and I glanced at the purport, I saw it and I thought, okay, I know that, I know that. Okay, what can I speak on? Nothing clicked with me. But when you slow down and you read Prabhupada's books and maybe you read it sentence by sentence or a few sentences at a time and you start to think, what point is he making here? What's the philosophy behind this? What is he trying to tell me? Then so much comes up. So I pulled three really, I think, very interesting points from this purport, and I'll just kind of read it again, but in sections. So the beginning, Srila Prabhupada says, Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, from whom the three creative incarnations, namely the Purusha avatars, Karnadakshaya Vishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Shiradakshaya Vishnu expand. The whole material creation is conducted by the three Purushas in successive stages under the external energy of the Lord, and thus the material nature is controlled by him. What does that mean? Great, it's up on the board. So, in different theologies, in different schools of thought, in different religions, this is often a big topic for discussion, or something that's different amongst different theologies. How does God create? And does he just create and leave it? And then it's just there, and he has nothing to do with it? Or is God personally involved? And Bhagavatam says something very interesting. It goes in so much detail that actually Krishna expands into Purusha avatars, or avatars that are meant for the creation and maintenance of the world. And this is Mahavishnu. And from Mahavishnu, all the aggregate elements for material creation come from his pores, from his breathing in and out, the universes are created. And in each universe, there is Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and then in each living entity, there's Paramatma, Shiradakshaya Vishnu, within the heart of every living entity. So very specifically, Bhagavatam describes this question that theologists and different practitioners of different religions have been asking for so long. How does this happen? And the answer is very clearly given here. And then Prabhupada goes on to say, well, if this is how the material nature is created, but Krishna is independent of it, he's desireless of it, he has no personal desire for anything in the material world, he has his own abode, it is not meant for him, who is it meant for? What's the material world meant for in the first place? So Prabhupada continues, the Lord is independent, desireless. He does not create the material world for his own satisfaction, as we create our household affairs to fulfill our material desires. Actually, the material world is created for the illusory enjoyment of the conditioned souls who have been against the transcendental service of the Lord since time immemorial. So I was thinking of what could be a good analogy to kind of describe this scenario. This material world is created for the living entity out of the living entity's own desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. It's a very strong philosophical statement that describes why we're here in the first place. So I was thinking there's this prison in outside of San Francisco called Alcatraz. Has anybody ever heard of Alcatraz? I see some excited hands go up. What's unique about Alcatraz? Is that right? It's on an island, and it's got a long history. And basically, also San Francisco is known for thick fog, right? They even have a name for it, they have an Instagram page for it, Kermit the Fog, right? Have you heard of this? It's one of the most popular Instagram pages on, on Instagram. It's just the fog. It's the fog of San Francisco. So if you're on this island, Alcatraz, and it's notorious for kind of being the prison place of the worst criminals known, the historically worst criminals in America. If you're on this island and there's no contact with the outside world, and there's so much fog, and imagine you're born on this island in this prison, would you know anything else besides the prison? Probably not. You can't even see, it's just fog. You have no phone, all you know is the prison, right? So you're in this prison, and you got a little prison room, and you have a little, maybe a mattress, a sink, and a bathroom. It's all in the same area. But then there's the guy across the prison, and him and his family have a nice prison room. There's a private bathroom, there's a couple beds, and you're thinking, man, if only I can get that room, life would be pretty sweet. That's as good as it gets. Think about that. But then upstairs, the prison guards have their own little lobby. And they have a coffee machine, and they have a TV, and you're thinking, I want to go there. That's as good as it gets. So this prison, the material world is likened to a prison. And I always thought, what a gloomy, dark, and you know, unpositive example, because it's so nice, it's so beautiful outside. What are you talking about, a prison? It's the material, nature is beautiful. This is Krishna's creation. But when you think about it this way, and you think about the prisoners, they don't know anything else besides the prison. And all they know is, how good can it get in the prison? But imagine if they saw the world outside. And that's what happens when prisoners escape. Oh, there's something better out there. And usually they know because they come from the outside world. But you can imagine, you're born in the prison, the fog clears, and you can see there's something else. And therefore you see there's something else outside. I want that. The prison is no longer attractive. You know, the upstairs lobby of the coffee machine, you don't care about it because there's something so great. So that's in the material world. That's what's being stated here. And that's why the material world is created. It's actually a place of education so that we can get out of this, you know, fog-like vision and see past the fog and see actually there's something beyond this that's so great. And actually I come from there. I didn't even come to, you know, I'm not originally from the prison. Somehow I ended up here. it's perspective. Prabhupada gives this really nice analogy. He calls him Dr. Frog. You heard of the analogy of Dr. Frog? Yeah? Dr. Frog is, Prabhupada says, there's a frog in a well, a 3-foot well. Yeah? How does it go? Yeah. Right. He says there's an ocean out there. I've seen the Atlantic Ocean, right? I've seen the Atlantic Ocean. It's really big. And Dr. Frog goes, oh, how big? Because this is 3 feet here. You're talking like 4 feet, 5 feet? He's like, no, like this is big, big. He's like, okay, 4 or 5. And he's thinking, oh, can't be more than 10 feet. This is as big as it's going to get, right? Okay, it's 10 feet wide. But he has no idea because he hasn't really seen it. So this is what's being described as what the living entity's position is here. And then Prabhupada goes on to talk even more, and he says, actually, though Krishna has created this, he's not a mean God. He's actually given all necessary necessities to live, to survive, for maintenance. And he gives the example of food. Actually, every species, there's no to talk about starvation, but when it comes to humans, because of greed, therefore, we've created these issues. And I was doing a little bit of research. I thought this was interesting. If you look at the amount of food that's statistically available in the world, it would feed the whole world 1.5 times. This is the amount of food that's produced, not just the amount of land that can produce food. The amount of food that's actually produced in the world can feed over 10 billion people. And it has the capacity to feed many more. If you want to hear an even sadder statistic, that 38% of food in America is wasted. That's sad. 38% of the food that's produced in this country is wasted. So he's stating a fact, Prabhupada, that this actually it's not any scarcity in this world. And he ends this purport with a really nice sentence. If there's any scarcity in the world, or scarcity in the world, it's the scarcity of God consciousness. Otherwise, by the grace of the Lord, there is no scarcity of anything. The scarcity of God consciousness. And so, what is that which can help us see past the fog and help us understand actually there is a reality beyond this prison? And that's a devotee. It's only by the grace of a devotee that can take your hand and show you, I've seen that there's something else, and I will show you myself, and I will tell you the knowledge which you can also see. So that's the direct, what I took to be directly stated in this purport and verse in Bhagavatam. But I want to look at the between the lines now, and kind of step back and look at the whole picture a little bit and what's very significant about this pastime. So Vidura is on a pilgrimage, right? He's on a journey. And actually, even though this is the third canto out of 12 cantos, in a sense you could say it's still the beginning of Bhagavatam. Some say the Bhagavatam first canto is like an introduction and it leads up to the beginning when Shukadeva Goswami speaks to Parikshit Maharaj. Some also say that first canto is like a preface, and the second canto is like an introduction because it ends describing about the 10 topics that are going to come in the Bhagavatam, and it talks about the original Bhagavatam between Brahma and Krishna. So if you look at it from that lens, then this is sort of the first pastime. And how does it start? It starts with a journey. And it's so relevant because actually all of us are on a journey. This is the journey of life. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Manushyanam Sahasresu. How is the second line go? Sahasrudhyayati Siddhyaye. So that amongst thousands of men, so amongst human beings, first of all, we go through 8,400,000 species of life to come here, so that's a journey on its own. But once you come to a human being level, out of thousands amongst men, so out of human beings, so many people, very few can actually come to the stage of self-realization, actually choose that path. So that's one journey on itself that all of you are on. You have such a fortunate opportunity to be on that path. But even of those on that path, who really knows Krishna as himself, and not perhaps as the energy or as Paramatma, but knows him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the real, best true friend of every living entity. So it's so important to realize that, oh, actually Bhagavatam starts with a journey. Maybe I should pay attention, because I'm also on a journey myself. And then where does this journey take, or where does Vidura, what does he do on this journey? Does he go to a cave and close his eyes and be alone and try to figure it out all on himself, or all by himself? No. He does something very important. He seeks out pure devotees of Krishna. That's the first step. There was this very beautiful verse in the Bhagavatam that I want to refer to. It's 325.25. And it says, in the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation. And thereafter he's freed, and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotional service begins. And Prabhupada says, the process of advancing Krishna consciousness and devotional service is described here. The first point in advancing Krishna consciousness is that one must seek the association of persons who are Krishna conscious. Without such association, one cannot make advancement. So the first step on the journey of life, the first just step on the journey of getting out of this prison house, of seeing past the fog, seeing the real reality, is to take advantage of associations of advanced devotees who are actually Krishna conscious. And this is what Vidura does. And so the first, I guess, lesson that if you're looking, reading between the lines, you can see that taking advantage or benefiting from Vaishnava association is so, so important. And not only does he make that point by first seeking out advanced devotees of Krishna, pure devotees of Krishna, Vidura also knows how to take advantage of that association. He asks questions. He asks questions. But he doesn't just ask any questions. Vidura asks questions that are not only beneficial to him, but beneficial to everybody, beneficial to all of humanity. The first question he asks, a few verses before this, Vidura asks, how do we actually become happy? What a nice question. I think every single person can relate to that question, devotee or not. How do we actually become happy in a world that's full of suffering? And he's seen a lot of it. He's seen war. He's tried to guide two fighting sides in a worldwide war. How do we actually become happy? And he asks these questions. And Maitreya Muni glorifies him. He says, oh, Vidura, you're asking these questions, but it's not like you don't know the answer. Actually, you're the son of Vyasadeva. And actually, interesting backstory, he says that you used to be Yamaraj in your previous life. I didn't know this. Because you were cursed by a sage. And a sage was performing austerity, and there were thieves, and the thieves were running away from the police. And they thought, I'll just pretend to perform austerity with this sage, and the police won't catch me. But the police caught him, and they caught the sage also. They took everybody in the ashram, and they hung them. But this sage was so powerful that he didn't die. He stayed alive. And he went to Yamaraj, and he said, this is not fair. You're in charge of justice, but this is not just. Because I didn't do anything. I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and I got killed, or I was to be killed. You know, Mark said, well, actually, when you're a little kid, you're playing with the ants, and you try to put a little straw through one of the ants' bodies, so because of that reason, this is your karma. And then he said, no, under the age of 5, there should be no karmic reactions. And so he cursed Yamaraj. You'll take birth in the family of a Shudra. So actually, he's Yamaraj. Yamaraj is one of the 12 Mahajans. So why is he asking such questions? And I was thinking about this, and it led to a really important point that Yamaraj is asking, or sorry, Vidura is asking such questions not just to get answers. Hare Krishna, thank you. Thank you for coming. not just to get answers, but he was asking such questions because he wanted the association and he wanted to serve Maitreya Muni. And by hearing from advanced devotees, we're actually serving advanced devotees, because they become very pleased when they have an opportunity to speak about Krishna. And by hearing about Krishna, we serve the Supreme Lord directly, because Krishna is very pleased to know that someone is hearing about him. Because he knows, if they hear about me, then they have an opportunity to be freed from this prison house in the material world. They have an opportunity to see the fog, to see what's past this material reality, quote-unquote reality. And therefore, he asked these questions, even though he may have known the answer already. Because one, they're beneficial to everybody, and two, he wanted to serve the great devotee Maitreya Rishi. And the same thing is illustrated with Shukadeva Goswami. That when Shukadeva Goswami spoke, both Vyasadeva and Narada Muni were present. Vyasadeva is his guru. Narada Muni is his param guru. Why were they present? Because he was so transcendental. And it was also service. This Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, as we say every day before Bhagavatam class. This is regularly serving the devotee Bhagavata and the book Bhagavatam. How? Both by hearing from them. And by this way, devotional service is planted within the heart. And one can become fixed in devotional service. So I wanted to end with a nice story. I was thinking that, what is a modern day example of somebody becoming, hearing from the pure devotee of Krishna and it really changing their life? And I heard this really nice story from Indraduma Swami, and it's a story of someone who's not a devotee, who didn't commit to Krishna consciousness like, you know, in the traditional way, but met Srila Prabhupada, and this one meeting changed his life forever, because he met him with, and took his instructions very seriously. He heard very sincerely. There was a Navy admiral who met the devotees in France, and Indraduma Swami was a brahmachari then, and Prabhupada was in New Mayapur, or in Paris maybe. I think Paris. And so he took this Navy admiral and his family and said, come meet Prabhupada, because Prabhupada loved to meet very important people and speak to them. So the Navy admiral came. He came dressed in his uniform, and Indraduma Swami said, Prabhupada, I brought one Navy admiral. And Prabhupada's eyes lit up. Oh, please bring him in. And so he came and they talked for hours. They talked about so many things. And Prabhupada was preaching and they were talking about philosophy. And he says, Srila Prabhupada, you talk about this book, Bhagavad Gita, so much. I want to read the Bhagavad Gita. But which chapter should I focus on? And Prabhupada said, the ninth chapter. Tell the most confidential knowledge. Focus on the ninth chapter. And he said, okay. And he took the Bhagavad Gita. And that was it. And then years later, after Prabhupada departed, Indraduma Swami was saying he was doing Sankirtan in Paris at this big function, this big gala where all the Navy, Army, military people were there, all the VIPs. And he's dressed in his, you know, his sannyas outfit, and his garland, and a big shaved head tilak. And he really wanted to go in the inside area and give to all the very important people, but the police weren't really allowing him. And from far away, he saw this Navy admiral, and he thought, I recognize him. And the admiral saw Indraduma Swami, and they recognized each other. And this admiral walked through all the security, and everyone was looking, why is he going to the Hare Krishna? And he gives him a big hug. And he said, do you remember me? He said, of course I remember you, and I remember your guru. He goes, that was the most important day of my life when I met Srila Prabhupada. It was the most important day. The Maharaj asked, well, are you still reading Bhagavad Gita? He goes, of course. Your guru said, every day, not a single day has gone by when I haven't read the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And then he asked, so how is Guruji? How is Prabhupada? And then Indraduma Swami had to break the news that actually, recently, he's left this world. And I'm very sorry to share. And this is all happening in a public assembly. And the Navy Admiral looks directly in the eyes of Indraduma Swami and he starts crying. You can imagine a very high up military man in a public assembly. He starts crying, tears start streaming down his face. He said, that day was the most important day of my life. That day I met your guru was the most important day of my life. And that was it. And with tears down his eyes, he walked away. It just shows that from someone who has no contact with Krishna consciousness at all. This is such a powerful step. You meet a pure devotee of Krishna. You come in contact with Krishna's devotees. And you really, really try to do that. Imagine this is one meeting with Prabhupada. We can have a meeting with Prabhupada every single day. It's here in these books. Every single day you can associate Srila Prabhupada. There's so many devotees, so many wonderful advanced devotees that we can associate with all the time. We can be in their presence, we can hear from them, we can ask them questions. But this is one meeting, and he sincerely took the instructions. That's very important. He read the Gita every day, and it changed his life forever. So I want to encourage you that this is this meeting between the lines, that we look at the Bhagavatam, actually what's happening. This is a journey of Vidura that's going on, and it's such an important journey. And it's important because he shows the step of how to make a journey in our life, and that's to associate with devotees, with real advanced devotees of Krishna, devotees who have really lived the words of the Bhagavatam and really tried to share that with others. And when we do that, it really makes a difference in our life. So I really encourage you to seek association. There's so much in our community. Your teachers, perhaps your parents, your grandparents, so many devotees that you see here every day in the mornings. We're really very, very lucky. Prabhupada said that this ISKCON movement is meant for us to associate with one another, to have this association, and to give association to one another. So please take advantage. I will conclude with that point. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. And thank you to the students for staying. See you next Wednesday. And if anybody has any questions, comments, very well. Any questions or comments? Yes, we have time. Let's see whether we've gotten his hand up.
I have a question about a line in the purport.
Yeah.
Where Srila Prabhupada says, thinking material nature to be independent is like seeking milk from the nipple-like bags on the neck of a goat. Can you tell me how you want to
I was reading this last night and I thought, what does someone... I looked at it, I was like, I don't really know what that means, and maybe I'll just skip over it and hope no one asks a question. But I thought about it and I tried to open different books, like different commentaries, to see if any acharyas had spoken on that point. And then I Google searched a goat, because I was like, what's a goat even? Where does their milk come from? They have udders like a cow, actually, under the belly area. And their neck looks like it would give milk. So it says, let me read that. Thinking material nature to be independent, thinking it to be independent of Krishna, is basically, it's like, it's false, it's useless, it's dumb. It's like thinking that milk comes from here, from the neck. It doesn't. It's just, it's kind of like Prabhupada's giving a sophisticated way to say that it's useless and pointless to think that material nature is independent of Krishna. So much so if it's like looking at a goat and thinking milk comes from there instead of there. So that was my takeaway from it.
Independent of Krishna.
Yeah. So thinking material nature to be independent. And you were saying in the verse how Supreme Personality of Godhead is independent and desireless of the three worlds. So he's not dependent, he's not affected by the modes of material nature. Interesting point though, right? Sometimes Prabhupada makes these sentences or analogies and he makes you think, oh, I've never thought of that before. Thank you. Any other questions or comments on today's verse or subject matter? Thank you very much then. Gandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.